¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRNP guest line. We're being joined by former Astro, former Houston Cougar, go Cougs, once a Cougar, always a Cougar, I should say, and Nimitz Cougar, Michael Bourne. Michael, thanks for taking a few minutes hanging out with the Killer Bees. Christian Javier yesterday was fantastic. We were arguing earlier about, I think it's the greatest pitching performance in Houston Astro history. There's other names on that short list. I understand that there's a conversation and argument to be had there. But what did you see from Christian Javier last night in Game 4?
Well, for me, always, when I know he's on, he's commanding his fastball. He always does. And I could just see where he was placing it at. Even when he would miss, he would barely miss. But, you know, he would miss in or miss away, not by much. And he could pitch the slot off of that, and sometimes he would throw the changeup. But for the most part, he was fastball slider, and he had fastball command throughout the whole game. And he just kept them off balance, man. He kept them. He made them hit his pitch, and they could not. They could not make the adjustment. And I mean, isn't it crazy how a game is? The game before, yeah, they had 5 home runs, and the next day they get no hit.
Well, Michael, that's where I was going to go with it. The fact that the night before they couldn't stop talking about this could be a short series because of how dominant this offense was, how comfortable they were, and then all of a sudden they were guessing on every at-bat, and you could just see the great graphic when they showed the difference between his slider and the fastball and which direction it goes, how stupid they could look if they guessed the wrong pitch. I mean, I don't think people really – they were so focused on trying to get that first run across that they didn't really concentrate on what a gem he was pitching.
I agree with you 100%, and that's the gift and the curse you do about trying to live by the long ball. The Phillies just do that a lot. They like to live by the long ball. They hit the long ball a lot more probably than the Astros do. But the Astros hit it, but they play by contact still. So when you look to look for that pitch to try to hit a home run, somebody like Christian Javier, the way he was playing last night, you know, and that's a very tough task to do, and that's what happens. I mean, you get 5 home runs the night before. They set on pitches off McCullers, but this night, the next night off of Javier, they couldn't do the same thing. And that's the tell of two things of trying to hit the long ball all the time, you know. And they failed last night, and tonight they got another tough task in Justin Verlander.
Michael Bourne, our guest on the HRNP guest line. One of the things that amazes me about Christian Javier, and I think amazes most people about Christian Javier, is that he's really a two-pitch mix guy, and it's really the fastball. I mean, he throws his fastball 60% of the time, slider about a quarter of the time. He'll show you the curveball. He'll show you the changeup. But how do you have a dude who is a dominant starting pitcher that throws a two-pitch mix, Michael?
That tells you that the best pitch in baseball, to me, is a best-place fastball. Like, I mean, if it's down and away from right-hand hitter and down and away from a left-hand hitter, it is very tough to line that ball up and make it stay fair or, you know, get it in play because you have to – if you try to hit it and try to hit it back up the middle, that means you have to come around it to hit it. You're probably not going to do a good job of it. He just knows how to place it, man. He knows how to throw it, and he stays by what his strength is. What I like about Christian Javier the most is he doesn't go off of what the other team's strength is. Like, if that other team is a good fastball team, hitting team, which the Phillies pretty much are, it doesn't matter. He's going to say, it's me against you. I think I can beat you, and I'm going to show that. And one thing I like about him, too, in the dugout, he's very relaxed, very calm, doing breathing exercises, so he makes himself relax in a big moment, which is very big in baseball, in the World Series.
Michael, as a hitter, can you explain that disappearing fastball? Because I think that the layman watching the World Series or the common fan looks at it and says, well, he's not throwing 99 to 100. He's throwing, you know, between 93, 94, and 96, 97, but yet everybody says it's the most unhittable fastball or one of them in the game. What makes that disappearing fastball, and what, you know, why is it so hard to hit?
I think because if you look at his front arm angle, the way they pause his front arm angle, I think he has the ball very well. So by the time you pick up on it, it's kind of late. That's why you see on the sliders when they do swing it, they don't pick it up most of the time. You know, so the fastball, everybody's going to sit on it because he's throwing it 60% of the time. But they don't pick up on it and the location on it until it's almost on him. Cliff Lee used to be like that a lot. He used to hide it with his arm, but with his body as well. So you can't pick up on that fastball. You can't find the release point of his arm. It makes it very tough to hit. And I think his 93, 94 actually plays up to about 96, 97. So when he gets up to 96, 97, it's even harder than that. So he's just one of those rare pitchers that's able to do that. It's hard to be a two-pitch pitch as a starter, but I've always liked him as a starter more than coming out the bullpen.
Michael Bourne, our guest on the HR&P guest line. The offense came alive in that fifth inning last night, Mike, with the five spot in the fifth. One thing that was encouraging to me was that they scored those runs without a home run. Every playoff game that they've scored a run in this postseason, there's only been one game in which they haven't. That was Game 3 of the World Series. They've had production using the long ball. It's accounted for 66% of their runs. How about the fact that the Astros are able to hang a five spot in the fifth without the long ball?
Well, I've always thought they could do that. They did it in, I think, Game 2 in the World Series. They hit three doubles in a row in Altuve and Pena and Alvarez. Nothing went out the ballpark. But I've always thought they could do that. I've watched them over the years. And I talked to Troy Snicker, the assistant hitting coach, and he told me they've never sacrificed power for contact. So they could hit for power, but they do it in the right way to me. They're not trying to swing and miss to do it. You know, they're not looking for one pitch. If they get that pitch, they'll hang their hat on it and try to go deep. But other than that, like you said, they can do it in so many multiple ways. You know, think about this. When even though they didn't score in this scenario, Tucker's on second, ball fields the ball at third. As soon as he lets it go, he gets to third. That's playing baseball to me. That tells me that their game is in the right place in the game. Their head is in the right place in the game. And they end up not scoring, but they put themselves in position to be able to score and them not striking out a lot and putting the ball in play, even though they end up striking out those times. But they put themselves in position to score over and over and over. And eventually they're going to come through. And one thing I like about it also is that they don't panic like that. You know, if you watch them, you know, they have that calm demeanor, but they're still intense in the game, but they know that they can get the job done.
Michael, I need to ask, going back to the McCullers start, because it's like, another unwritten rule in baseball that you don't talk about what you know and or tip in pitches. But as a hitter, they talk about the hitting meetings that you guys have with the pitching, with the hitting coach, and the things that you watch on video. And that as professionals, you guys are able to pick up more than most. How important was it that it seemed like that they, whether it was Harper and or the rest of the team, that they did pick up something on McCullers? And on the flip side, how easy will it be or difficult for McCullers to fix that?
Well, it won't be difficult for him to fix it if they know what to fix. That's the thing about it. It's just the fact that they know what to fix. But I don't know if he's tipping or not for sure. I'm not 100% positive of that because, I mean, yes, they did hit the home runs off of him, but most of them come off speed. For me, like if I'm facing him, I'm probably going to sit off speed. If I'm a hitter going against McCullers, I'm going to sit off speed. And they did hit one home run out on the fastball, and that was Alec Boehm home run. But other than that, it was all off speed. Changeup, slider, curveball. He throws like 65% off speed, 65 to 70% off speed. So they do the opposite of Christian Javier. And it's slower, so they can sit there and wait on it. And McCullers is a very successful pitcher. To me, this is just me personally, if he throws the fastball enough to keep them honest. When he doesn't throw it enough to keep them honest over time, man, you got those hitters up and down that lineup. You know, they hit a, you know, that's a very fierce lineup. They were getting them in the zone. They wasn't chasing a lot. They was making his off-speed be in the zone. Now, they might have had something. I know they said Harper whistles on the bomb. That tipping, when you tipping, somebody they have to know that before the game, or they have to be in the dugout and actually know what to look for. Most of the time, when you tip it, you want to look at it from another hitter's up there, so you can see it and practice it before you get up there. But I mean, they might have had something on them. We'll see. Oh, well, hopefully we don't have to see, because I think they're hopefully they could finish it off before 66 games.
Michael Bourne, our guest on the HR&P guest line. You know, looking at the way McCullers pitched against the Phillies, you mentioned they were sitting off speed, whether they had his stuff or not, they were sitting off speed. And then you have Javier, who lives off of his fastball, especially the invisible. It looks like it's rising up in the zone. And then you look back to a Justin Verlander in Game 1, who I think is capable of doing both. He doesn't have that invisible, the rise ball. It comes from that high arm slot. But he's capable of beating you with fastballs up. He's capable of beating you with breaking stuff. First three innings in Game 1, he didn't allow a base runner, and then it kind of all fell apart. I thought he was falling in love a little bit with the breaking stuff, which allowed the Phillies to catch up to it. How do you think Verlander gets back on track tonight in the Game 5 in Philly?
I just think Verlander has to be Verlander. You know, like when that 170 ERA, that he, whatever it was that he had during the regular season, he has to do what got him that. You know, like he can't worry about it, you know, trying to get that first win in World Series. He has to just go out there and pitch like it's a normal game. I remember Terry Pendleton telling me this, you know, in the wild card game when it was just one game. He was like, play it like a normal game. I didn't do that. I actually was amped up in my head. I'm like, no, it's just not one. But he was right. You have to go out there and pitch like it's a normal game, even though that's hard to do because you got to think of all the success he's had all throughout his whole career except for the World Series. So that gets in a player's head over time. Like, man, I got to get this win for the, you know, I got to get this win. As you said, like you said, game one, he had a 5-0 lead. In most cases, if you give Justin Verlander 5 runs, that game is over. That game is complete. That's over. He's not going to give up 5 runs. He's probably giving up 5 runs and maybe, I don't know, 4 starts in his regular season career. Maybe, you know, maybe it's more than that, but it's not a whole bunch. I can tell you that. So for him to do it over and over again in the World Series, that's telling you that he's putting a lot of pressure on himself instead of being. I could kind of see it when he, you know, in that inning where he gave up the 3 runs. You could see him starting to press a little bit and start to overthrow a little bit and do things he normally doesn't do. But, I mean, it's Justin Verlander, man. It's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. So if he can just go out there and pitch like it's a normal game, if he can put that in his head, he'll be just fine. But if he goes out there and presses and tries to, you know, do too much, you're going to have another bad result. But I think that I'm hoping that he comes out and does what he normally does in the regular season. That's that. We're going to act like it's a regular season game tonight.
Break it down for us, Michael. How's it played out the rest of the series? Pitching matchups, it seemed to favor Houston now again, even after the rainout. How do you see it shaping up?
So I thought that helped the Phillies because they was going to pitch Noah Syndergaard game 3, and I felt like, is Zach Wheeler going tonight?
No.
Game 6.
Syndergaard is going tonight against Verlander.
Syndergaard is going tonight. So I actually like that matchup for the Astros. So Syndergaard is not the pitcher that he used to be. I think the Phillies are going to try to get him through 3 or 4 innings if they can. You know, they were really banking on Nola trying to win that game. But I think they're trying to get Wheeler a little extra rest. I don't know if y'all know, but like towards the end of the season, Zach Wheeler was dealing with a lot of arm fatigue. He missed a couple of starts. Towards the end of the season when I was on the road with them, he actually missed a couple starts on some rest. So it actually worked. He came back throwing 98-99. Then in the first game in the playoffs, he did the same thing. But against the Astros, you noticed his velocity was just a tad bit, you know. So not that it was way down. It was like 95, 96. Sometimes, most of the time, he's running that ball up at 98-99. At 3 extra miles per hour can make a difference to Major League Baseball hitters. So I see tonight, the pitching matchup to me goes to the Astros. Noah Syndergaard is a okay pitcher now. He's not the pitcher that he was when he first came up. You know, he just doesn't have the velocity. So he tries to pitch more and try to get hitters off balance or, you know, use his off-speed stuff a little bit more. So I see the Astros taking the game tonight, and I got them finishing it in game 6 in Houston.
Beautiful.
All right, Michael, thanks for taking a few minutes to hang out with the Killer Bees. Enjoy game 5 of the World Series tonight. We'll catch up soon.
Thank you. I always appreciate you having me.
Of course. Michael Bourne, former Houston Astro, former Philly. He's done TV work with both of them this year, actually. Of course, U of H Cougar, go Cougs, and an Image Cougar, too.
Have you mentioned that before?
Yeah, I have. 713-780-ESPN. I want to have the conversation about Zach Wheeler that he brought up because, you know, the Astros are going to see him
pretty
in
good
game
intel
six.
Right there, too.
Yeah, and game 5 tonight with Noah Syndergaard, some maybe observations about him. Also want to get into the Lance McCullers-Javier conversation because we might see one of those guys back in this series if it does go the full 7 games. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Just had Borny on. A couple things that I want to get to that he talked about. 713-780, you're ESPN. You're welcome in today. Text line's down, though, so if you want to talk to the Killer Bees, you call the Killer Bees, 713-780-3776. Or you can tweet at us. He's at Pac-Man Joel I'm at Jeremy Branham. The Zach Wheeler conversation's interesting. The scheduled Game 6 starter. One of the reasons that Rob Thompson wanted to go Zach Wheeler in Game 6 is because he alluded to the things that Bourne did. Had the knee concerns a little bit late in the season, had the arm fatigue late in the season. And in this World Series, Thompson, when asked why he didn't go Wheeler in Game 5, says there's a little bit of fatigue there with Zach Wheeler.
Yeah, look, that, you and I were talking about it during the break. I had heard that they were blaming a lot of it on his knee, that he had issues with his knee late in the season, but I thought, and you mentioned that Thompson had mentioned that in a few press conferences, that the first I heard of it was Michael Bourne, who traveled with the team, obviously doing some broadcast work for the Phillies as well as the Astros. I thought that was great intel, because he definitely was a different pitcher, and it's definitely a different Wheeler from a hitter's perspective when you do lose 2, 3, 4 miles an hour on a fastball to be such a dominant fastball pitcher. So it's interesting, and if he's going through that, I don't think you can get rid of all that fatigue as quickly as you'd like. I don't expect him to have that 98-type fastball the rest of the series.
Yeah, and he was a little bit down in his previous start, too. I think that's why they bought him the extra day. In regards to Syndergaard, Borney hit it. Like, Syndergaard isn't the same pitcher that he used to be. He doesn't have Syndergaard talked about it yesterday, because they always talk about they always talk to the next day starting pitcher the day before. So Verlander had his press conference before Game 4. Syndergaard had his press conference before Game 4. And Syndergaard, during his press conference, they asked him, you know, how are you a different pitcher than in the past? He's like, look, I have to pitch more as opposed to throwing, because I don't have the velo I used to have. I don't have the sharpness on my breaking ball that I used to have. And quite honestly, they're not expecting a whole lot from Noah Syndergaard tonight. Thompson mentioned in Game 3, like 35 pitches for Noah Syndergaard. 2, 3, maybe 4 innings if he's pitching well for Noah Syndergaard. I don't think the Phillies are in terrible shape, though, with their bullpen. Like, their bullpen's really good. Jose Alvarado threw, you know, upwards of 20-something pitches yesterday, but that was the first time he's pitched in 4 days. He'll be fine today. Robertson came in for an inning. He'll be fine today. That was the first time he's pitched in 4 days. Sir Anthony Dominguez will be fine today. And they're not scared to use those guys for multiple innings anyways. I think from a Phillies perspective, they would love to get 3 innings, 1 run
no
from Noah Syndergaard.
He's not stretched out. He's not going to give you what a normal starter would give you. It's basically a bullpen or all hands on deck day for them. He just is going to, you know, be like a guy that's a bullpen guy trying to eat up innings. He's trying to, like you said, give you 3 at the max, I would think. Maybe, you know, if he's rolling and he has a couple of low-pitch innings or a low-pitch count inning, they might try and squeeze an extra one out of him. But I don't think it's anything that doesn't say advantage Astros no matter what, because you would assume Verlander, regardless of which Verlander you get, last time out, first time through the lineup, he was very, very good. He was effective. No one got on base or got a hit. But you're going to watch both guys, but as long as you get a better Verlander and the Verlander that we're used to seeing, what Michael Bourne was talking about, hopefully it's an advantage Astros right from the jump in terms of the starting pitching.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go to Alex. Alex, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Alex?
Hi, guys. My question to you guys is, go out and get a Christian Vasquez. Why is he not able to DH in games, you know, in games like this, when the guy has been there, he's done this? We're getting no production out of Diaz, out of Mancini. Yes, Hensley had a hit, but I would still want somebody like Christian Vasquez DH. And I understand they're only carrying 2 catchers, and if something happens to Maldi, which is, if something did happen, you would be able to move Vasquez over to catch defensively if it was an injury.
Yep.
My question is, what happens to the DH?
The DH will turn into the pitcher. Thanks for the call, Alex. If you burn the DH, the rule is that the pitcher has to enter into the lineup. So there's danger there. Now, if it happens late in the game, if Maldonado gets hurt in the 7th inning and you have to make Vasquez the catcher, you're burning the DH, your relievers are probably only going 1 inning anyways, but now you're looking at pinch hits from, like, Mancini, from Diaz, the guys you don't like, Hensley, Dubon. Like, you're going to have to be rotating those guys in if that spot comes up in the lineup more than once. The biggest danger is if it happens early in the game. If Maldonado got, you know, hit in the groin and couldn't play the rest of the game in the 3rd inning, you burn the DH there. Now you're looking at your starting pitcher batting a time or two, you're playing the National League game. That is the fear of why a manager wouldn't use the only other catch-up on his roster in the DH spot.
In the nicest possible way, and I don't mean to derail, are there any names that people say wrong that just make you cringe?
You didn't like the Vasquez?
Oh, no. Vasquez is so much easier to say.
Yeah, I do. I do. And it's on the Astros. And I know that I'm not the greatest phonetic dude in the world.
To be clear, I'm not either. So I'm not criticizing
it. Jeremy Pena. When people say Pena, it drives me up the wall.
Okay.
Up the wall.
I think that Mario Pena. And Mario is always one.
That one's
people,
hard, though. Because
Some people have different preferences, too.
And the more popular one's not Ellie's. You know what I mean?
Right, you're right.
Like, the more popular one Mario. Is Mario. Not, yeah. And then Mario. I'm blanking on how to say Ellie's first name.
Mario.
Yeah, Mario. Like, Mario's the minority. Mario's the majority. That one's kind of easier to understand. But Pena over Pena.
You know the one they butcher a lot now in the World Series is Castellanos.
Castellanos.
It's supposed to be Castellanos, and everybody calls him Castellanos.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because I was listening to their PA guy to try and figure out which was right.
I've always said Castellanos.
And their PA guy says Castellanos, but most of the Fox guys call him Castellanos.
I think the only reason Vasquez got me is because it's easier to say Vasquez. Like, Vasquez requires, conscious thinking.
Where's the W there?
But I really am not trying to criticize him. I've gotten plenty of names wrong.
You could have fooled me.
It made me uncomfortable. It made me physically uncomfortable. And I'm sure I'm not
I
the only
I saw your
one.
Face the first couple times
was,
you said it.
It was. I'm sorry. That's a me problem.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line. Q wants to get in. Q, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Q?
How y'all gentlemen doing today?
Oh, good, sir. How are you?
Great.
All right, yeah. I think the Lance McCullers problem was more just him making bad pitches than him tipping. Because if you look, usually if a pitcher's making bad pitches, more than one hitter will key in on him, which, you know, that's what happened. Five different people hit home runs. Whereas that, if you look back when they showed the pitches that they hit out, they were actually very bad pitches. They were hanging sliders, hanging curves, and they were mostly center of the plate. Well, a major league hitter is going to hit those pitches hard most of the time. So I think if he, you know, if the thing that I believe that the hitter told the other hitters was just, hey, this guy throws majority curves at off speed.
Yeah.
Just sit on it and wait on, you know, him to make a mistake on that. Without the threat of a fastball and you hanging your curve and slider, well, those guys are going to hit you pretty hard.
Appreciate the call, Q. Look, I think all of those reasons contributed to it. Now, where I would push back with you, Q, is like they're going into the game already with the game plan of spitting on the fastball and chasing the off-speed stuff, like attacking the off-speed stuff would be a better way to describe it. So Harper's not going to pull Bohm over in that spot and be like, hey, remember our game plan. It's to attack the breaking ball. And Bohm actually hit the sinker. Like, Bohm hit the fastball. He was the only home run off of McCullers in that game that was the sinker, not a slider, not a curveball, not a changeup, was the pitch to Bohm that he had out of there. So, like, he kind of went against the game plan, although the game plan righties, lefties a little bit different, which is another reason that Harper's not going to call Alec over there in that spot and be like, remember the game plan, because they're different from each side of the plate.
Yeah.
I think that he was tipping the first two innings. I don't think it mattered. And to his Q's point, too, I think Lance McCullers' pitches were flat out poor, not executed well, and flat.
And from a hitter's perspective, it's much easier to sit on a fastball and adjust for a breaking pitch, but you're still looking for two different pitches. If you know he's only going to throw randomly two fastballs, basically, anytime you're at the plate, the chances and the percentages of you seeing a fastball are so slim that you can just eliminate the fastball from your mindset and your thinking. You could really put the barrel to the bat more often on a breaking pitch, especially when it's not breaking the way it normally does in the case of Lance McCullers, who has one of the best set of breaking pitches in the league. So it was the perfect storm to go against McCullers. And from a Phillies perspective, they do their homework. They, you know, Dusty even talked about how much work that Bryce Harper puts into hitting and analyzing pitching the way Maldi goes into how much extra he does analyzing every hitter in someone's lineup to put together a game plan and a scouting report from a catching and pitching perspective. So you tip your cap to them and say, for whatever the combination of reasons was why they were able to capitalize, they did. They won a key game in the World Series because of it, and you do. You tip your hat and you move on.
713-780-ESPN. Text line down. You got to call or tweet us. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. 713-780-3776. We'll get to some of your calls on the other side. Also, we know that Justin Verlander's on the mound. We just talked about Syndergaard a little bit there. Is tonight a legacy game for JV. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN at 92.5. Let's go to the calls. HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Sean wants to get in. I have no idea what Sean wants to talk about, but Sean, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Sean?
Yeah, hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I guess I just wanted to call because up here after that fake no-hitter last night, I don't even know if you would call it a no-hitter because it was combined. But just the gauge of the fans down there in Houston compared to Philly, I'm driving home from work and I kind of got curious, you know, with the hype of the Eagles playing tonight and the Phillies playing tonight. Just wanted to see if there's nerves down in Houston like there is in Philadelphia.
Sean, I got a quick question for you. You still there?
Go ahead.
How many hits did the Phillies have last night?
It doesn't matter.
No, how many hits? It's a simple question.
It really does matter.
It's a simple question, Sean. You said that it's a fake no hitter. Sean, how many hits did the Phillies have yesterday? When you look at the hit column next to the Philadelphia Philly name, how many hits were in the hit column, Sean?
Zero.
Sean's deflecting. Sean doesn't want to answer the question. Sean says it doesn't matter. Sean says it doesn't. It's a fake no hitter. Sean, how did you say
it's
zero?
A fake I didn't. No hitter.
How many?
It's a combined no hitter.
How many?
It doesn't go down the books. Is something like special?
It does.
How it kind of does, Sean. It really does.
Did Sean say how many hits there were in the Phillies column yet? I haven't heard that. Sean, how many hits were in the Phillies column yesterday?
Zero hits.
Zero hits.
Sean.
Zero hits.
Sean.
How many hits is zero?
We're gonna win the World Series.
How many hits?
Sean, here's what you're missing, too, when you make the football comparison. We want the Texans to lose so that we can get better because we're realists. You're the one that's sitting here with your thumb up your fanny trying to convince yourself that the Phillies are going to win the World Series. You have the best record in football. You're supposed to win tonight, and we're happy to have that. But baseball, different story, clown.
The whole... It's a fake no-hitter. How many hits did the Phillies have? None. That's a no-hitter. They had zero hits. Zero runs is a shutout. Zero hits is a no-hitter. Did it take more than one pitcher? Yeah, it did. That's why it's a combined no-hitter. Christian Javier, Brian Abreu, Rafael Montero, Ryan Pressly combined for yet another no-hitter in the World Series. You know the last time a team got no-hit in the World Series?
1956.
Don Larsen. How long ago was that? You can hang that up next to all. Put that next to the Rocky Balboa statue at the steps of that library or whatever it is in Philadelphia as they idolize a fake.
Hey,
dude.
Sean, we hate to break it to you, too, but you know what? When they did it in the regular season against the Yankees fans at least gave them their due and their credit and admitted it was a no-hitter. If you can't do simple math, let alone mathematics, and don't understand how to count zero means zero, then that's on you, not us, big guy.
Cheesesteaks are overrated, too. You know my favorite part?
It's cheese whiz. It's not even cheese.
You know my favorite part about Philly sports fans right now is bragging how the Eagles are going to crush the Texans today. I had somebody hop in my mentions that, oh, your NFL team's going to get hammered. I said, yes, please, and thank you. Like, no one in Houston cares about the Houston Texans game tonight. No one.
Nobody.
Most Houston Texans fans don't want the Texans to win tonight. It's a win-win if the Eagles win the football game this evening.
He thinks he's going to make us all, you know, caught in our feelings if he says, our football team's going to stomp you tonight. Well, if they don't, then you look really, really, really bad. Worse than what you did by calling this show, clown.
Yeah, Sean calling from the Rocky Balboa statue right off the banks of Broad Street there in downtown Philadelphia.
Or the love sign, because they're all about the love.
I think they tore that down.
No, they didn't.
They cracked it like the Liberty Bell.
I think that Sean did a really good job as a troll, crap-talking call. I have one note for him.
Uh-huh.
Got to have more energy.
Yeah, he was kind of laid back. You know what?
I've never heard somebody talk crap so like,
you know what he sounded like, Brendan? He sounded like a dude and a fan of his team that just got no hit in a World Series game for the first time.
He sounded like he himself got no hit.
Yeah, he did. He did. Maybe that's why he was calling it fake, because he was trying to convince himself.
Probably him on his online dating profile. No hits, so he gets upset, so he tries to take it out on others.
It's a fake no-hitter. Justin Verlander gets the nod today. Is tonight a legacy game for JV and what could be his final appearance on the mound as a Houston Astro.
His legacy is set. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame pitcher. He's going to the Hall of Fame. He's going to always be considered.
In Houston, though. In the city. Oh, okay. The way that we remember him.
Well, I think that if you kind of take it to the next level with that caveat, then I think it's definitely going to play a role. I mean, because we always talk about the Janet Jackson mentality. People don't remember as much good. They don't remember all the good of A.J. Hinch. They remember what A.J. Hinch did that they believe cost them a World Series. So when they think about Justin Verlander, they're going to think about the fact that if he craps the bed in another World Series game, no matter what he did and how much he was, you know, the guy that pushed him over the top in 17 and how good he was while he was an Astro, there is a majority, I would say, of this fan base that are going to remember the playoff shortcomings and say, this dude never got it done when we needed him to get it done, no matter what else he did.
If we're being completely honest, we've already seen it. We've already seen a lot of Houston Astro fans say, I'd be okay with Justin Verlander moving along. We've seen people point out the Justin Verlander World Series numbers that are not good, the recent postseason numbers that are not very good. We've already seen a good chunk of the Astro fan base that have a little bit of a bad taste and have soured towards Justin Verlander. I believe that if he has another poor start and this is indeed his final start as a Houston Astro, it does hurt his Houston Astro legacy of how we remember him in this city. His greatest moment will be his 2017 ALCS MVP, which is fine, but we'll remember that he never won a game in the World Series in 17, 19, wasn't around for the World Series in 21 because he was hurt, and then did not win a game, and maybe, you know what, the bed in 2022 as well. Now, we know the recent success. I just laid it out for you. They haven't been good. I think a good chunk of Astro fans have already soured a little bit on Justin Verlander. If he pitches well tonight and spins a gym and picks up his first ever World Series win in his like Hall of Fame career, I think all of that sour is completely gone and we erase all of it in terms of the legacy of JV in this city.
Yeah, look, again, it's the whole what have you done for me lately mentality. If he does something really spectacular or he pushes and just puts a really, really solid performance together tonight and they get a win, all is forgotten. I think that everybody is forgiving and forgetting and loving JV and, you know, basking in the moment. And then it's, hey, JV is ready to go if we need him whenever we need him. And if they need to see him again in a game seven in a short stint, everybody would probably have all the love in the world for him. But he's got to do what he's got to do tonight, and he knows it. And we always talk about this. No one analyzes the individual ramifications of their stints in their career like Justin Verlander. We know it when we talk about 300 wins and 4,000 strikeouts. We know he knows how bad his record has been in the World Series. He even addressed it at the press conference before the World Series. We also know Bob Nightingale told us he's traditionally better in his second start in the World Series than his first. Let's hope that's the case, because if he gives us a quality start and better tonight, I feel really good about the Astros' chances to win.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HR&P listener line. Parker, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Parker?
What's up, guys? I was just wondering, how long is the leash going to be on Verlander tonight? And if he gets rocked early, who do they go to, like, so quick?
Appreciate the call, Parker. The leash has to be short. I'm hoping that Dusty Baker learned that lesson. Now, like, you kind of have to feel it. You need to let the game speak to you, right? If Justin Verlander's looking like Cy Verlander that we saw in the regular season, you ride it. Like you ride it until it looks like he's starting to fatigue and tire a little bit. If you see, like, if you would want to follow the same game script as game one, I'm okay with the three runs he gave up. It was in the fourth inning, right? Fourth, fifth. I can't remember his third,
through,
fourth, fifth.
He was unscathed through the first three.
Yeah, that's
fourth
right.
Inning
so fourth
when
inning,
he
gave up the three runs and then the two runs there in the fifth inning. Like, I didn't hate the whole, like, three runs in the fourth. I don't hate Verlander coming back out for the fifth inning. I pull him after the leadoff double to Brandon Marshall, about to embark the third time through the order. So Dusty needs to have in his mind, third time through the order, kind of being a magic number, but they don't need to go Tampa Bay Rays where Justin Verlander, if he's perfect through two times through the lineup, that they're pulling JV right, because he's embarking on the third time. So the leash does need to be much tighter. You need to let the game speak to you, though, when it comes to Dusty
Who's
Baker getting the feelings. It depends on where you're at in the game. Like he Parker mentioned, if he's out of the game early, I think you turn to Luis Garcia in that spot.
That's
to
exactly
give you some,
I was thinking.
Now, you might go fireman to get you out of an inning. Like, if it's the third inning, maybe you go.
If it's a high leverage situation, absolutely.
Right.
Get a guy like a Stanek. Go get a guy that can shut the door, even if it's for two hitters. Yeah.
Get yourself out of the inning, go to the long guy, getting a fresh inning.
Yeah, and then once you, you know, and again, it gives Garcia more of that comfortable feel for him of starting an inning fresh like it would be starting a game, and he can settle in and he can get going. But I don't think that Garcia, you're going to look for four or five innings out of him that, you know, tonight either. I think that he's going to give you a couple, and then you're going to look to your high leverage guys, especially depending on what the score of the game is. If you have a lead, you're protecting a lead. I think as soon as you start entering the 6, 7, 8, 9, you start looking, if you're Dusty Baker, you should start looking at all your high leverage guys and have them ready to go and say, "That we're playing this one like it's a game seven. We're going to, if we have a chance to shut the door on this thing, we're going to shut the door, win this game, and take total control."
713-780-ESPN. Is this a legacy game for Justin Verlander, his Houston legacy? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, we all know that I like telling you about where to go if you want to put money down on a game, and that's why I always tell you to go to mybookie.ag. Mybookie.ag is the biggest online selection of odds and contests for all your sports betting needs. It's anytime, anywhere, any place, and it's truly amazing. You can bet on the NFL, the NCAA. You can swing for the fences with the World Series or with the brand new money bag. The MyBookie money bag is a one-of-a-kind opportunity to spin for crazy odds on props and futures. Just place your bet, spin the wheel, get ready to score epic odds on the best teams, athletes, and events going on. And if you win, you're going to win big. Sign up free today. Use the promo code BET975. Get your first deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That means you put $1,000 in, you get $500 extra. Now more money in your account means more games you can bet on and more chances to win. The promo code again, BET975. Claim your deposit bonus and give yourself that competitive edge. Turn your picks into winners at MyBookie.ag. It's not just a sports book, it's a community. As I always tell you, bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it, MyBookie.ag.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
King of Twitch on twitch.tv/ESPN975 is asking us to invite all Philadelphia fans to call. They need to vent. It's healthy. I think it's a great idea. I think it's a great idea. If you're a Philadelphia fan, maybe you're in town because of the Eagles. You might have more fans in NRG Stadium than the Texans do tonight. They're wearing red because of the Phillies, after all. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776.
Which building has more fans tonight? Minute Maid Park for the viewing party might be right up there with NRG Stadium.
I didn't see much. I only saw one video of Minute Maid Park, so I didn't really. And it was only on the one side.
They had the whole left field line where they were pushing the majority of the people. Now, look, framing it for a TV shot for Fox looked really good.
I have, like, how many people do you think will be at NRG tonight?
25.
See, I think the Philly fans will travel pretty well. I think it might get close to 30.
Do you?
I think it might get close to 30 because of the Philadelphia fans. I think that will travel well.
They're not going to get 30.
They're not
for
getting
the baseball
that at Minute Maid Park.
No.
They're not getting that.
I joke. I said it in jest, but actually, in reality, more people I think are going to be, from an Astros perspective, from a Houston perspective, are going to be way more dialed in on Astros than anything that happens with the Texans.
The secondary ticket for the Texans tonight is actually a little higher than I expected.
I think there's a lot of Philly fans in this area that are going to the Eagles game.
Oh, to be clear, we're still talking under $40 for an NFL game on a prime time. I mean, I know it's Thursday, but it is a primetime NFL game. I bet you, and this would take so much research, this is the cheapest primetime game of the season to go to.
Oh, I would for the NFL?
All over the NFL.
I would disagree.
I bet you it's close.
There's some terrible Thursday night football games.
Yeah, but they're not going to miss the World Series.
Was Bears-Washington Monday night or Thursday night? Because that was awful.
No, I'm not. Sorry, I'm not talking ratings. I'm talking cost to go to the game.
Yeah, but who the hell wants to go see Bears in Washington?
Does Jacksonville have a primetime game?
Because every team has to have a primetime game, but those markets aren't going.
But Jacksonville had a London game.
Not always at home, though.
Jacksonville had a London game.
It matters where the game's played.
Yeah. I just think what they're going up against, $37 is very cheap for an NFL ticket.
A year ago, I think you could have gotten in for under 20.
Yeah, it was like,
for a primetime game?
For a primetime game, no.
No, but just for a Texans game.
Yeah, like I'm talking noon kick on Sunday.
I'm talking $37 right now, day of, for a primetime NFL game. It might not be the lowest.
Right.
It's going to be in the bottom five.
I would say it's bottom 10%. I don't think it would be the lowest on the year.
Maybe not. I wish I was monitoring it. I'd be very curious.
Yeah, I'm very curious about that.
I'm
now
also
too.
Very puzzled by what Smoltz brought up last night on the telecast. And by the way, I'm a big fan of John Smoltz.
I am too.
He brings so much in terms of the thought process behind every pitch and every play. But when he said, is this the first time ever that the two cities that are playing in the World Series football teams are playing on the same night that they're playing,
I in my mind thought if it's not the first, it's one of only like one or two. This is like the did they say the seventh time that this has happened?
I missed that part.
Yeah, they were talking about the seventh time that the two teams competing in the World Series would be playing on the same night as their football teams would be playing each other as well. That just seems with scheduling and everything so random that it wouldn't be that frequent.
Yeah, it is kind of weird.
Yeah, that caught me by surprise.
Odd tidbit. Carolina and Atlanta play on Thursday Night Football next week. Because if you go to ESPN, their scores, they have like secondary ticket prices there. Tickets are lower next week for Carolina Atlanta on Thursday Night Football than they are Texans Eagles tonight.
I think the one thing that hurts my argument, and I wasn't, you know, that was just speculation.
Kind of thinking.
Is how big Houston is as a city.
Right. Like, a lot of transplants,
there are a
things
lot
like
of
that.
Cities, ton of transplants.
There are a lot of cities that are so much smaller, and by that alone, it's going to drive prices down.
Yeah. So, Rare Candy's saying that they tried to jinx the no-hitter last night, constantly mentioning it between
Does
innings through
you?
The broadcast. Did they complete the no-hitter?
Yeah.
What jinx?
Yeah,
what jinx I is mean, there if they completed the no-hitter?
I think the attention given to that should have been drawn to the fact that when Granato was one of the first to be irritated by it, he showed a picture of his TV, which is in a gold frame.
Yeah.
That looks like it is so foo-foo and, like, over-the-top-ish.
I got to admit.
That should have gotten a ton more attention than any
it got a lot
jinxing
of attention.
In the no-hitter.
I have that same TV. Now, I don't have
You have a TV with a frame around
I don't
it?
Have the frame. I have the frame TV. That's what John has. I'm not 100% sure. I'm 90% sure that John has the Samsung The Frame TV. In our living room, we have a The Frame TV by Samsung.
What does
that
mean? It's called The Frame?
It's just a really, really thin TV. Now, with what you can do with The Frame is you can buy the border. We don't have the border. John has the border. But,
is it diamond studded and gold plated like Granato's?
Yeah, I don't think it's really... People, I think, exaggerated that.
Granato's frame, I think, costs like 10 times more than the TV.
People exaggerated that. Now, I can almost say with a high degree of certainty that he has the Frame TV by Samsung, which is just a really, really thin TV that you can hang on the wall and you can put like pictures on them. Mm-hmm. And it usually like it'll show the picture. And then when you want to watch TV, you just click watch TV. We have a Frame TV. We just don't have the frame around the Frame TV.
Which
the
gold-plated
it looked like
Granato. Crusted,
yeah. Granato looked like he had the gold frame around the Frame TV.
There's Gucci Mane and then Granato who's Gucci Man who just goes that route.
I couldn't afford the frame. I do afternoons. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line, get Cortez. This is dangerous. Let's get Cortez in here. Cortez, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Cortez?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
What's up?
I just wanted to get my opinion on Justin Verlander, whether the Astros should really think about considering extending him for another 3 years and giving him the asking money. We really need Justin Verlander, not for regular season wins, for postseason wins and for World Series wins. But as you guys can see, his record is not the best. So I just want to get your guys' opinion on that. And also, Sean, I hope Sean is still listening. Shut the hell up. I'll let go with that.
I like it, Cortez. I knew it was going to be dangerous.
Sean was the Philly guy?
Sean was the Philly guy saying it was a fake no-hitter. Yeah. So
I thought his name was like Pinky or something like that. I didn't catch that it was Sean.
I don't want to have the Verlander conversation yet. Like, can we not talk Verlander future
well,
yet?
If you don't want it, we won't have it. That's
like,
just that simple.
More and more people...
You started this
I know,
mess.
But I did.
You started this mess.
I started,
soup
well,
ladle.
Let's be honest.
You stirred the pot.
I did not. Because I said this in August, and everybody called me a moron and that I should shut up. And then all of a sudden, 3 months later.
They're not wrong.
The thing is, we're not going to want to have this conversation if they win the World Series for a while, right?
No, like, I think we can have it a few days after.
So I think it's going to start coming up, especially because of what Javier did. And if they win the World Series coming off of that, the way they ride the momentum, we're going to have this conversation.
No matter what, we're going to have
sure.
It.
But does it have to be today?
No, I don't think so.
Right. Doesn't have to
so
be today.
Are we not allowing that question
anymore? One step
anymore
at a time.
I feel like you need to enjoy. No, I wouldn't say 3 weeks. Like I would even say a day after
days,
the World
2
Series.
Days. We're going to have it.
Yeah, post-World Series. Post-World
How does
Series.
This team maintain and sustain? Well, then you start looking at who's coming back and what are you doing.
The World Series is going to finish over the weekend. Are you willing to take that question on Monday?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're going to shy away from it.
I think Tuesday.
Sure, whatever. That's fine, too.
You need a day
We're just
to...
puppets. You just tell us when to speak, and we'll speak on it.
You need the day to mourn or to celebrate on Monday, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, it could be.
Boy,
could
think
be.
About what's going on in Philly with the Eagles and everybody's concerns, and now James Harden just announced he's going to miss a month with strained foot tendons. Oh, no.
How many of you want to hear about James Harden?
None.
713-780.
I just saw it flash across the screen. Breaking news.
Maybe it's all going downhill.
Maybe
for
it's
Philadelphia.
Broken. You
maybe,
don't know.
Maybe, you know what happened? Is those guys were yelling at Mattress Mack, telling them all these things about Altuve. Mattress Mack went right back at them. F-bomb, which I love both sides of it, if I'm being completely honest with you. But then Mattress Mack yesterday was running up the steps. I bet you he put a curse on Rocky Balboa in the city of Philadelphia.
Fine. Whatever it takes. I mean, the thing is that I had Lisa asked me, she goes, is that a bad look for Mac because he was cussing and everybody? I go, are you kidding me? That just endeared him to this city and made him even more popular, if that's possible, and more of a legend and a hero in the city of Houston because he wouldn't take it because he went right back at him and he gave him a piece of his mind the same way they gave it to him. I thought it was all world.
I like both sides of it. Like, I know a lot of people in the city of like, oh, Philadelphia, classless. Like, as long as you're not throwing out, like, racist terms or physically
threatening, saying
harming
you're
somebody.
Tear the jerseys off the Astros fans.
So what? That means obviously not serious.
Well, you don't know. These days, you don't know who's serious.
He's in the concourse. He's going to walk onto the field and rip the jerseys off of Altuve? Like, that's just fun trash.
No. He was talking about, at a certain point, too, he said, all Astros fans, we should see him and rip their jerseys off.
I mean, he's... And if you're not causing physical harm or saying, like, racist things, everything's on limits in a rivalry. I think it makes it fun. Like, these people yelling at Randy McIlvoy on TV, oh, you go home. I think it's hilarious. I think it's awesome.
I think it, you know, and I don't know if you've ever been in those situations or not.
Absolutely. I've been called tons of
things. But I'm saying, when you're live on the air, it's annoying as hell when someone keeps doing that. But, you know, everybody has a different opinion. I just think there's a time and a place for it. And you can sit there and say, oh, you're from Houston. And while he's walking to do his live shot or whatever, do it. But the fact that the guy, you know, who's never going to see it himself or his friends see it anyway, are doing the pelvic thrust and screaming and yelling in Randy's ear when he's trying to do a live shot.
It's hilarious.
It's pretty classless.
I think it's funny. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line. 713-780-3776. Go back out to the HRP listener line. Big O, you're in the high with the Killer Bees. Go ahead, Big O.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
What's up, man?
Caller, long-time listener. Love you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, I want to get my opinion on this guy, Sean. He's talking about that for some reason we did a fake combinal hitter. Listen, Sean, it's hard to do what the Astros just did. Not just this one time, maybe twice in the history of Major League. It's even harder to throw a complete game and also a complete no-hitter by one pitcher. So, yes, what they did last night was incredible. I've been an Astro fan to the core. So listen, complete hit means no hits. That's it. Like you guys said, how many hits did they hit? Zero. So hey, go home, go to Philly, take a bath, and leave us alone. We just
take a bath in your cheese whiz. Appreciate the call, Big O. Thanks for coming strong. Thanks for being a loyal listener. 713-780-ESPN. Remember when they had the seven-inning games in the COVID year where they were playing like the doubleheaders and they was it seven-inning, or was it like nine-inning, then a seven-inning doubleheader? I think it was the latter. I think the second game was a seven-inning doubleheader. And remember Madison Bumgarner threw a seven-inning no-hitter. They wanted to put an asterisk next to it. I think that they actually did. I think that there is an asterisk next to Madison Bumgarner's no-hitter. How many outs did the Astros get yesterday as a staff without allowing a hit? They got 27 outs in that game without allowing a hit. That is a no-hitter. Was it a combined no-hitter? Obviously. Obviously, it was a combined no-hitter. And to Big O's point, I think it is harder to get a combined no-hitter than a complete game no-hitter. Now, this generation, you're not going to see guys go as deep, but all it takes is one of those four pitchers to make one bad pitch, and the no-hitter is gone. You can't dismiss this as being one of the greatest pitching performances of all time.
Yeah, look, I think the other thing is that the end result is what it is, regardless of how you want to place the no-hitter part of this. You didn't get a hit, as you mentioned. There's a zero in the hit column, but in a very, very, very important game for both teams, they shut your ass down. They just basically start to finish, and everywhere in between said, nope, not tonight, not with our pitchers, and if you think it's not that big of a deal, then your pitchers should do it too. And since your pitchers haven't done it, and you haven't shown the same kind of ability to do the same kind of thing, you don't have to like sing the praises all over the place. Tip your cap, just the way we did when you hit five home runs in a game and shut the Astros out. We tipped the cap and said, you know what? You won. Lance McCullers tipped his cap. They were better than me. But
Don't sit there and sit there and be whiny, baby.
Chris says, I hope Dusty doesn't think it's a legacy game, because if he does, Dusty might leave JV in longer than he should. 14 out of the 15 Philly runs in the series are on the starters. It's a good point. Good point. Got to have a quicker leash on JV tonight. 713-780-ESPN every Thursday at 2. It's Bad Take Boulevard. What are the worst takes of the week? Let us know. Got to tweet us at Pac-Man Joel, at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.